This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening and welcome to The Essentials. I am your host, Hubert Edwards. This is number two of The Essentials, The Reset. And tonight we are going to have ourselves a wonderful conversation. We started last week and last week was extremely high energy. We got a number of callers, persons participating. We're looking for the same level of participation. This week, we pretty much have a three-segment show. We're going to talk a little bit about something happening across the Caribbean, how we are putting our minds together as Caribbean nationals to deal with the environment and to address some issues which are going to be beneficial for the entire region, for individuals, countries, for a long time to come. We started last week to touch on some aspects of the budget, and that wasn't completed. So we will wrap that up, and we'll wrap that up very speedily. We're not going to get too much into that, I think, at this point in time. Most persons will be having an overload as it relates to the budget, but there are just one or two things I want to get in. And then I am going to wrap up with a letter from prison. A letter from prison. You don't want to miss that part of it. You don't want to miss the last part of it, a letter from prison. And so we are going to jump right into the conversation. We have two guests on our live line from Jamaica. We have Professor Rosalie Hamilton and from the Bahamas, Mr. Chaz Garraway. Welcome to The Essentials.
Thank you very much, Mr. Edwards. Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, certainly a pleasure. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Professor Hamilton, and certainly a pleasure to interact with you. Chaz, we know you from another place, and you know we always celebrate your brilliance. And here you are working in the service of country, in the service of region. Let us start with you, Professor Hamilton. What is this all about, Caribbean Tree Planting Week? Talk to us about that.
Well, we are part of the Caribbean Philanthropic Alliance. Mm-hmm. This is an organization that came into being in 2019. And our objective is really to address the development challenges in the region through philanthropy. We are committed to the idea that philanthropy must serve developmental needs. And in particular, our efforts to enhance the sustainable development goals. And so when we came into being, we were on the verge of that 10-year sprint from 2020 to 2030, mm-hmm. and we wanted to accelerate the achievement of these goals. And so we thought that we would create a network of activities across the region focused on a couple of these SDGs, and we thought we would start with the climate change. And I must say to your Bahamian audience that Bahamas and Chaz Garraway in particular was very instrumental in that initial focus because Chaz joined us as we launched the organization in New York at the UN as part of the SDG Action Zone back in September 2019. And it was in the throes of your Hurricane Dorian. And the devastation was felt among not just you in Bahamas, but all of us across the region. And we felt that, listen, we have to do more. And so Chaz's own passion and, you know, commitment to climate change was one of the seeds that began this conversation among us in the region that we need to do more around addressing climate change. And so we felt that something that every single citizen, every one of us can do is to plant a tree. And so the Caribbean Tree Planting Project was born in February 2020. We made a commitment to the Clinton Global Initiative that we're going to, this is a commitment to action, that we were going to act and plant trees. And we set ourselves what we thought was a very ambitious target, 1 million trees across the region. Mm-hmm. And we created the kind of network and mobilized philanthropy. And Chaz will tell you later whether we achieved it or not. Let me leave that up to him. Right. But I want to say that we thought we would do at least 10 countries, do a million trees, and then we would, you know, work with young people like Chaz, and he came on board and he's really did an awesome job leading young people across the region, both as youth leaders in their countries, as well as tree planting ambassadors. And all of that effort has culminated to where we are today, where we're about to launch the first ever Caribbean Tree Planting Week.
Okay, so before we get into that and get some views from Chaz, You mentioned development through philanthropic effort. Expand on that a little bit, because I think that's an important aspect to tease out, especially against the backdrop of we have suffered from Dorian and multiple hurricanes across the Bahamas, but certainly right across the region, we are now going through or heading towards the aftermath of COVID-19. And I think the idea of philanthropy as a medium of national and regional development is not something you hear about every day. Talk to us a little bit about that.
I'm glad you raised that. It's a very important concept. For far too long, we have seen and treated philanthropy as charity, mm-hmm. you know, addressing the needs of our country in a charitable way. And as important as that is, when we think about what we're doing, we're also tackling some development needs. When a charitable organization helps a school, They're enhancing the educational capacity of a nation.
That's correct.
And so when we think about the work that we're doing more carefully, we see that they're really aligned to developmental objectives. Mm-hmm. And so if we target and organize our interventions more strategically, and we see philanthropy as an important resource to enhance development, then I think we can be more effective and strategic in our philanthropic activities, and in so doing, enhance the capacity of our countries to achieve our development goals.
Yeah, that's
and that's a kind of conversation that we're having among ourselves as members of philanthropic organizations. I lead a philanthropic organization in Jamaica, the Lasco Chin Foundation. And that's the conversation we have internally as with our board, as well as other philanthropic organizations, where we're now recognizing we need to collect data, we need to provide resources and assistance in an evidence-based way, we need to monitor and evaluate our interventions, and to ensure that they're aligned with our developmental objectives and ultimately the sustainable development goals.
And I think it's absolutely, absolutely an incredible way of looking at it. I think we, in some instances, we just need to rethink and restyle this. And I salute you. I congratulate you, Professor Hamilton, on the work you have been doing. I have had an opportunity to kind of peep in on this in some small ways. And definitely, you know, the discussions, the interventions, the collaboration with persons within the region, outside the region, diaspora persons are absolutely, absolutely so wonderful and refreshing. It really gives hope. But what gives the most hope to me is the inclusion, the active participation of young people like Chaz Garraway. Chaz, you're a part of this whole thing. Tell us your role. Tell us what you take away from this. Tell us how you want to use this medium to impact your country and to impact the region and to impact the world at large.
Wow, that's a lot. But I will talk a lot. First, I want to just thank you for allowing us to come on your show, and to Professor Hamilton for giving me such kind words, as always. Being a part of this project has been a very eye-opening experience, but it's also been very rewarding because we've had the opportunity to impact so many people across the region. Last summer, we hosted a competition called It Starts With a Seed competition, where people from across the region would compete, and basically they would have to plant a seed and grow it into a tree and record and post that the progress of their tree throughout the competition. And what we found was that at the end of the competition, so many of the people told us of how they had impacted, they had positively impacted their community by people asking them about the tree they were doing, asking them about the posts they were posting on social media, getting people in their community involved. And so it was really great to see how a small project like that could have an impact. And from there, we just took off, and that gave us more motivation to continue the work, which led us to reaching out to 22 countries, territories, islands across the Caribbean, where we had, Prof, I think it was 5,000 youth that participated. Is that the number?
Yes, we're close to that.
Yeah, we got to really motivate and inspire and give youth across the region opportunities to really get involved with climate action and tree planting. And my role in this project was really just to motivate and inspire young people and just to help as much as I could to get different teams and country groups with going with their projects as well. And I have to highlight, it would be ill of me if I did not highlight Melissa Ingram, who led the Bahamas 100K tree planting project, which the Bahamas contributed 126,000 of the tree count that we will announce later. Mm-hmm. But Melissa did a very good job leading the people here, the people home in the Bahamas to plant all of those trees. And to everybody else, they did a great job.
Yeah, and I think that's as impressive. We tried to reach out to Melissa. We didn't make contact, but certainly want to celebrate her. And, you know, just from a Bahamas perspective, you know, often, and even for across the region, often we hear discussions about the youth, and the youth is wayward, especially the male youth. But there's so many individuals out there who are doing fantastic things. And their worldview is different from conventional wisdom. They're looking beyond the borders, recognizing our interdependencies, recognizing our connection, recognizing the fact that as a people, the region in and of itself is an asset, and the extent to which we can develop and grow that. So when young people come together with not so young people, but who are smarter and vibrant, like Professor Hamilton, the individuals who can think you through issues, who can, you know, kick the door down by just whispering, this is, I think, a formula for the way forward. And when we tie that together with this whole idea of development, attaining the sustainable development growth, and this has been enabled by philanthropy, I think we now are shifting into a whole different world. But the the one spillover from this, Professor Hamilton, or one direct spillover from this, is the whole idea of protecting biodiversity, and it also have heritage or cultural implications. Talk to us about that.
Well, if I can go back to the point you made about the sustainable development goal, it's very important. One of the things that we contemplated at the end of last year, when, of course, the world was caught up with all the implications of the COVID pandemic, mm-hmm. and at the end of the year, you heard about the excellent work that Chaz led during that period of the lockdown and so on, and online, we mobilized young people across the region to plant a tree, plant in the backyards and so on. So it starts with a seed, and it's idea that, you know, you can do things even in the adverse circumstances of a pandemic.
That's correct.
And we used the opportunity when we all had to step back and reflect. And we looked closely on the Sustainable Development Report of 2020. And what it did, it tracked the performance of the SDGs on countries across the world. And it had data from 16 Caribbean countries. And though that data suggested that 12 SDGs, these countries have been doing very badly on. Mm-hmm. They're either major significant challenges or they're decreasing or stagnating trends. And they include hunger, clean water, industry innovation and infrastructure, inequalities, and the peace and justice. Of course, we're in the most murderous region of the world. And so that is something that, you know, ranked very high. So in these areas, we did very badly. Also, life on land. Life on land is the whole idea of planting more trees and protecting the environment. No, what it tells us is that, you know, it's not just about planting trees, but we want to, for example, plant trees that feed. And so a major partner in what we do is the Trees That Feed Foundation. And that aligns very nicely with the Sustainable Development Goal 2 that seeks to have zero hunger.
Yes.
And during this COVID pandemic where, you know, it is bringing on hunger in the region in a way that we've never seen before, you know? And so these challenges are huge, and we recognize that we have to see the planting of trees as more than just planting trees, but shoring up coastline and addressing issues like life underwater, just tackling some of the, clean water issue. That's a major issue for many of us in the region. That also gets addressed, etc. And of course, industry, entrepreneurship, business that's associated with trees. So we see, I want to also add very importantly, empowering women. Women and children, especially empowering men as well. But what we know from the data is that during this COVID pandemic across the world, we've been seeing increase in gender-based violence. And a lot of that is about violence against women and children. And so we have to tackle that, and we can empower women through planting trees.
Yeah, I think it's important too to kind of set the context, and I think you did that very well, for individuals to understand, look, you know, this is not, you know, back in the days they would say, you know, some tree-hugging people, and nothing is wrong with that. But this is fundamentally about the growth and development of communities. It's a growth and development of countries. And if we drill down, as you would have indicated, Professor Hamilton, it's about changing the lives, changing the circumstances of individuals. Because, you know, ultimately, when we solve the problem of a country, we have to start at solving the problems of the individuals. And while the circumstances may differ in that they have their own nuances from country to country, generally speaking, we are kind of all in the same boat as far as this is concerned. We are seeing the impact across the region from COVID. We see the vulnerability from weather events such as experience here with Dorian and a multiplicity of other hurricane. And we know that one of the things which COVID has unveiled, whether we want to admit it or not, whether we are comfortable talking about it or not, is that poverty in this country and in other countries is way, way, way more entrenched than we would have discussed before. And so when we have projects like these, when we have a philanthropic organization that runs right across the region, the Caribbean Philanthropic Alliance, it's not just about persons out there trying to be do-gooders and trying to be in the limelight for themselves. This is really about national and regional development. And so we call on persons, you know, just like we have young Chad and Melissa from the Bahamas who participate. We are calling on young people especially to be a part of the solution, be a part of the solution for the future, your future. You're going to be here longer than I, certainly. And so you want to be, when you hear the call from a Chaz, when you hear the call from a Melissa, you want to respond to that. You want to get involved. And to those who are out there who are policymakers, those who are in the position of giving, contributing, is not just a donation. This is an investment into the future of the country. Professor Hamilton, before I get back to Chaz, anything you would want to say along those lines?
Well, you know, I absolutely agree with you that we have to think very broadly. And I think the COVID the challenges that the COVID pandemic has raised is now forcing us to be much more diverse in our thinking to see how we would tackle this massive problem we have on our hands. And it's not a problem that's going to go away very quickly. I want to say something that Chaz raised earlier about the work that is being done in Bahamas. I want to say this, and because I don't want us to end the program without putting it in perspective. But Bahamas did, in my mind, and I'm saying this as leading this initiative from the Caribbean Alliance perspective, has done the most profound work in this. And I'm not just saying it because Chaz is here or because I'm...
No, it's provable. I know that, you know, like I'm saying.
I'll tell you why. And we're going to tell you the numbers later in terms of what we did. Right. But there were only two countries in the region that did more than 126,000. And one of them was in Haiti, and it was funded by a major, it's a large plantation, mm-hmm. and it was funded by Timberland. It's a big international organization. They were planting timber across Haiti. And they've partnered with us. Some of you may see and will hear about Tanima. It's a cartoon character. It's part of their whole promotion of the work they're doing, et cetera, and they're collaborating with us. So we got their numbers, and it's a significant part of it. And the other country, Jamaica, collaborated with our forestry department. And so the numbers reflect not only the work of the team, but also the work of the country, with all the resources of a nation behind.
Right.
Tree-planted effort. And I must say, as you know, we have a national target here in Jamaica to plant 3 million trees in 3 years. Mm-hmm. So you know that we're trying to ramp up the effort.
Yeah, but, and I think... here in the Bahamas, Chaz, who are the entities behind that? I have seen indication that BAIC and the Ministry of Agriculture and Marine is participating in the tree planting exercise. I saw something recently where they say, you know, come and get your trees. I think that was for Labor Day. Come and get your trees and go and plant. You know, how is that going? Where are we, Chaz? And what are we looking at for the future?
So to answer that, there was many, many groups involved. So in the Bahamas, there was 36 total partners, but the group leading the tree project in the Bahamas was the Sustainable Lifestyle Group, led by myself and Melissa led the project in the Bahamas, but with the help of so many, the Ministry of the Environment, the Forestry Department, partners on the Family Islands. We also had help from Mr. Malis, from so many people across the country that supported, that donated, that helped us throughout the past year and a half. Queens College, Blue Lagoon Island, that helped us to host our first tree planting and also QC that held the launch for our project. Mrs. Minnis, who was also a part of the launch of our project, and so many others that were able to help. Going forward, though, we are planning, we have a few things in the pipeline that will be announced shortly, but to keep up to date with what's happening, you can follow the Sustainable Lifestyle on Facebook and on Instagram, and we also have a website, thesustainablelifestyle.org.
Okay.
And on those platforms, we will be sharing what we will be up to in the coming weeks, months ahead.
And definitely, and you can also stay tuned.
If I may, I just wanted to put in perspective the amazing work, because these two countries I mentioned have a much larger population. Haiti is what, 11 million?
11
Jamaica,
million.
About 3 million. Right. And Bahamas, what, less than a half a million?
Yes, definitely. 400,000 at best.
There you go. And to say that, you know, that is a tremendous achievement. And I really want to commend the team.
Yeah, that it's fantastic. And especially, you know, given the coordination, you know, it just goes to show, you know, size don't always matter.
One more thing. For those interested in getting involved with the Carafil Alliance and the Tree Project and planting trees, we do have an ambassador program where you can be a part of the project by promoting tree planting in your community and in your country, and also have the opportunity to meet and cooperate with so many people from across the region with other benefits as well. So if you're interested in joining this project, you can reach out to us on Facebook and social on Instagram as well at the Carafil Alliance or the Caribbean Tree Planting Project. Those are the pages.
Yeah, definitely. And you want to stay tuned to the essentials, because as you know, that if it is happening, and if it is happening in the region and it is something of great significance, you can believe you can take this to the bank. The essential is going to be plugged in. We are there someplace. We are hooked into Chaz, we are hooked into Professor Hamilton, and we will bring the information, because it's not simply just about radio. It's not simply about, I'm not here breaking news. We are part and parcel of this. And we want to be, largely because we see the importance and the impact that it can have. When you hear about the whole idea of planting trees, for example, in Haiti, which has had a significant level of deforestation, you understand the importance of this. And so we want to make sure that we give due coverage and due opportunities for them to let the world know exactly what they're doing. We have a couple more minutes here, Professor Hamilton. Take us through the upcoming calendar starting July 5. I know you have a number of things. We have about 2 minutes to go, so we can just wrap up on what to look for from this initiative, from the broader initiative under the Caribbean Philanthropic Alliance.
All right, we have a lot of exciting activities. We're going to open on Monday with some prayer from the indigenous people in Suriname, and we'll give a overview of the week. On Tuesday is our signature event. We have the collaboration with the Clinton Global Initiative. We're doing a regional cultural celebration of trees. Trees in all shapes and fashion. You don't want to miss that. And you can register online. Again, it's on our Facebook page. We want you to make sure that you're part of that. We're also going to hear a very important historical, scientific analysis and journey of the baobab tree from Africa to the Caribbean. And that will take place in the afternoon of Tuesday. And on Wednesday, we're going to have a special kids event. So we're doing an educational event for children, and that will be led by the Trinidad team. On Thursday, we're going to have a very interesting conversation about women and trees, empowered women and trees, that relationship of how trees matter to the empowerment of women. And then also, we will be talking about the breadfruit tree, that miracle fruit, by Mary and Mike from the Trees That Feed Foundation. Friday morning, we may have an event from Puerto Rico. We're confirming that. But in the afternoon, we will have a presentation from a professor of Suriname in Professor Naipaul, and he's going to talk about climate change. And Saturday morning, the young ambassadors will shine. They're going to do an awesome event. Chas can tell you more about that. In the evening, we have a musical evening with trees. Sunday morning, we're going to do some medication and health, mental health with trees. And then we close up and have a closing event on Sunday afternoon. We wrap up the week.
Sound like it's going to be a stimulating time, and certainly a wide, diverse range of events, which should be eye-opening. You know, we don't think about trees and like this generally.
And let me just quickly say that these are the regional events that we're coordinating, but nationally, there are activities that will take place in each country, and some of it online, so you could tune in. Others will be just local. So it will be a range of activities across the region.
Okay. Chas, quickly, as we come to the 7 o'clock hour, let's talk about the youth ambassador event quickly.
Right. So the youth ambassador event will be on Saturday, July 10th, as Prof mentioned, and it will basically be featuring all of the ambassadors who've been with the project so far since January, featuring the work that they've been doing in their respective countries and sharing some insight and some aspect of their experience being an ambassador and why planting trees are so important. And just before we close out, I do have to mention that we were able to overcome and complete our goal, and we were able to plant 1.396 million trees in 22 countries.
That is fun.
Able to achieve the goal.
That is fantastic news. So the target was 1 million, and we did 1.3
million. It's actually updated to 1.4 now because some of the countries reported after that figure was publicized.
Okay.
So it's now over 1.4 million. So we're really, really proud.
Definitely. We need to keep those trees alive and make sure that they grow and bear fruit. We're clean out of time, but certainly give you, Chas, a quick 30 seconds to wrap up here. Last words.
Right. I just want to encourage everyone out there to be a steward of the environment, to take care of the Bahamas, take care of the Caribbean, take care of your local environment. You don't have to be a specialist or a scientist to take care of the environment. Just plant a tree, plant a seed. And I just want to encourage the youth out there that even though something might seem that it might be difficult or impossible to achieve, once you get going, just start, pick something, try it out, and just keep pushing, and you will be able to achieve your goals.
Thank you so much. I know Chas from another place. People, this is not just words flowing out of his mouth. This is a very serious, serious young man. And someone we need to keep our eyes on. We need to embrace him. We need to surround him and Melissa. And we need to celebrate young people such as they are. And, Chas, Melissa, on behalf of the whole Bahamas and the region, if I am, going to be so empowered. This is my show. I can take lease with that. We thank you and we celebrate you. And we are very, very appreciative of the effort that you put in. You are the future. But you are also the now. And so we thank you for that. We thank you for your work and your commitment. Professor Hamilton, your final words?
Yes, I want to just join you in thanking Chas, Melissa, the entire Bahamian team for the tremendous work you've done. Really have made us very proud. And I want to just say to all the listeners, please participate in the Caribbean Tree Planting Week. We encourage you to sign our letter. It's on our Facebook page. Encouraging the heads to recognize a week formally so that every year we can do this, because this is absolutely needed if we're going to deal with this existential threat we have of climate change destroying our lives and really undermining our capacity to be who we are, Caribbean people. plant trees, plant enough trees, enough love.
Plant enough trees, enough love. Certainly, Professor Hamilton, like I mentioned with Jazz, want to thank you for your work in Jamaica and across the region here in the Bahamas, participating in significant ways. You have paved the way in many regards. You have the keys to many doors. And the thing I am very, very heartened of, you know, having met you not too long ago, but, you know, developing an understanding, is the extent to which you are so welcoming and allowing other persons to participate in these platforms for the opportunity of doing good for the rest of the world. And so we want to thank you for your work. We're giving you your flowers while you can smell them. And, you know, we celebrate you. We absolutely celebrate you. And we want you to continue to do this for a long, long time to come. So, ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. Professor Hamilton, Rosalie Hamilton from Jamaica, and Chaz Garraway, our youth ambassador from the Bahamas. This is the Caribbean Philanthropic Alliance and the Caribbean Tree Planting Project, Caribbean Tree Planting Week. You want to get involved in that. You want to look out. You want to stay tuned because we will have more information on that. We're going to take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to touch on some aspects of the budget. And then we're going to get into maybe what we're here for tonight, a letter from prison. You're listening to The Essentials. Come right back.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Sign up for CostRight membership and join the Savings Club. As a member, you get access to exclusive discounts on your favorite grocery club packs, appliances, electronics, outdoor living, and so much more. Whether shopping for your home or business, you can enjoy low warehouse prices on quality name brand products. Your CostRight membership also allows you to save at other participating businesses, and Gold Card members can earn an annual 2% reward up to $500. Sign up for the CostRight membership card today and let the savings begin.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to The Essentials. If you want to join us, our numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, and 325-4259. Our text line, 422-4796, 422-4796. I don't see the instrument, but I think that is the number. We certainly would love to hear from you what you thought about the Caribbean Initiative, the Caribbean Tree Planting Initiative, the Caribbean Philanthropic Alliance, the discussion about growth and development within the region through philanthropy, achieving the sustainable development goals, the UN sustainable development goals, by rethinking, repackaging, if you will, repurposing this whole idea of philanthropy. So we started this discussion last week about the budget, and we got into some aspects of the debt and the breakdown. And we had a couple of callers who contributed significantly, and I think kind of broadened that conversation. And pretty much the takeaway would be, you know, where are we today? Are we in trouble? Are we at a good place? Are we in a spot of bother? The honest answer to that from me would be yes. But is it totally doom and gloom? Absolutely not. Is it going to be easy going forward? No. There's a lot of work to be done. There's absolutely significant amount of work to be done. My one concern here is we must very, very quickly start to change the narrative. We must very, very quickly and very speedily start to change the narrative around the budget and around the economics of the Bahamas. Here is why. Not to get too political, but if you're an FNM, your objective is to win as a party. If you're in the PLP, your objective is the same, to win. If you're a DNA or any one of the other contending third party, as we refer to them as, your outlook is to win. But at the end of the day, what is much more important is that the Bahamas wins. If anybody else wins or loses, and the Bahamas lose, we have a problem. And so the question is, how do we put the Bahamas in the best position, the absolutely best position of winning? I believe that that position starts with changing the narrative. And in order to change the narrative, honestly, in order to change the narrative and have the right, honest conversation, we must first unequivocally admit where we are. And in simple terms, we are not at a good place. The Prime Minister said something recently, and in many ways, I agree with him. In other ways, there is more to be said on that, and I will, you know, take that up at another time. But he pointed to the fact that, you know, there are critics, and critics are supposed to be listened to so that the government can do better. Absolutely spot on. He then goes on to say people kind of criticize, as we say in the Bahamas, people talk a lot of fool. But the end of that statement which he made was, look, at the end of the day, we had to make a decision as to whether or not we're going to support people on their job or feed people. And his ultimate statement was, there is going to be no apology for borrowing to feed people. I want you to think about that statement, not at the level which it was given or in the perspective that it was given in terms of borrowing to feed people as in the physical sense. But think about the Bahamas as a country, not simply restricted to food, but think about the Bahamas as a country needing to borrow to provide those other things, needing to borrow in order to survive going forward. Last year, we had this conversation based on a publication by Marla Ducaran that the Bahamas may be walking into a structural adjustment program with the IMF. And, you know, at the time, you know, everybody threw their hands up and they cried, they shouted at her, you know, obviously, we didn't think it was so. I personally didn't think it was so. We thank God that at this stage it is not so. But the issue of debt remains very, very fundamental. The issue of the economics of the Bahamas remains at a critical, critical stage. How are we going to fix this going forward? Because, you know, it's one thing to critique, yeah? It's one thing to say, this is where we are. The truth is, no one person have the answers. And I wouldn't even sit here and start to tell you that I know how to solve those. I have some thoughts. 99.99999% of the time, my thoughts won't matter anyway. But I have some thoughts I could share, I would share, I have shared, I've been writing on this. I have put out a number of articles, very long articles, printed in 3 parts and 4 parts and 5 parts. So I do give this some thought. So what exactly are the single definitive items which need to be done, which need to be effective, which need to be implemented in order to fix the Bahamas? You know, I can't tell you, I can't put my finger on that. Again, I have some thoughts, but in broad principle terms, there's some things which we have to do. And the last article that I published, that was published, it ended with a call to action. And a call to action, if you understand what that is, you know, yeah, now that we've spoken, now that I've written this long thing, what we do then? When you speak, like I'm a member of Toastmasters, one of the things that we learn is, yeah, you build your argument, you have an opening, a middle, and a closing. But someplace in that argument, as you come to the end, you must have a call to action. Otherwise, you just waste 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes a person's time. You haven't told them what to do to become better or how to at least think about how to effect what you have just spoken to them. And so my call to action in this particular article says, these are starting points for a strategic outlook on the way forward. We have to now start to think that if there is low economic growth and revenue isn't improving, the government must increase taxes. If revenue growth cannot be secured, then spending must be curtailed. Yeah? The pegged exchange rate is upheld by foreign currency reserves. So as you work through the issues, these are the fundamental things which you need to kind of deconstruct in order to fully understand what is happening. So low economic growth and revenue is not improving. And it's not likely to improve because we're going to, at some point in time, go back to our historical level of growth, which has been at or just about 1% for almost a decade or two now. We have to consider the fact that, you know, government may want to increase tax. We have a peg exchange rate, and if there are no foreign exchange inflows, then we have to borrow in foreign currency to support that. So if the inflows are not robust, and foreign exchange loans must be secured so that we can keep the Bahamian dollar parity going. However, debt is largely a function of all the other factors. Debt is usually a function of income, of growth, of the level of taxes, of expenditure. If you make $1 and you can cause that $1 to provide all your needs, then you don't have to borrow any money from anywhere. But if you make a dollar and your expenditure is $1.50 and you have to make that up from someplace legally, then you'll have to borrow the 50. And there is where you end up with a deficit. And this is what the Bahamas find itself in. This is where the Bahamas find itself. I write here, however, debt is largely a function of all the other factors. When we look at the other factors in this formula, it becomes clear that if as a country we fail to secure broad-based solution, the impact could be long-lasting with the potential to create radical shifts in standards of living. What do I mean by that? If we do not fix growth, if we do not get to a stage where we have sufficient revenue to cover our expenditure, if we do not get to the place where we can invest enough through capital investments, yeah, to move the country forward, we are going to have a problem in that we will definitely have to borrow or continue borrowing, or we decide not to borrow and we go to a nice treatment of austerity. Either way, it has the potential to change the standard of living in the country. That is important. So let's go through this very quickly. The call to action says, these are starting points, the things I just mentioned, for a strategic outlook on the way forward. The most important issue to be addressed is the path to economic growth and an always evolving destination for that growth. What that means, we need to grow. And whatsoever that target is, it needs to be evolving. It can't stop. It's always have to be moving. It's a moving target, but we have to get growth in there. In the process of considering this, there must necessarily be some dreaming, some aspirational reaching beyond the points that all reality suggests is impossible right now. So when you look at a multiplicity of issues facing us, you may think we can't have a 5% growth. We cannot have a 6% growth. We cannot invest in infrastructure and so on and so forth. We have to dream beyond that. I believe we have to start asking ourselves the question, stop saying what we cannot do, and start asking ourselves, how can we do that? That is the aspirational aspect that I speak of. And when we do that, I think it's going to be a little bit different, because when you start to frame the mind in a way where it starts to look for possibilities, then possibilities usually emerge. We must then shift to start asking ourselves how we can get there. How can we achieve this desire and be committed to confront the obstacles that lie between where we are now and where we desire to go? And that is where the minds of the country need to come together, all sides, because collectively the Bahamas must win. It's important that we do that. The other aspect is that the budget itself, going through this budget exercise, listening to the presentation by the Prime Minister and Minister of Finance, listening to the sectoral presentation, we now understand that this budget has provided us with a glimpse of what the real challenges are for the future. So it doesn't matter whether it is the FNM today or the PLP tomorrow or the DNA the next day. It doesn't matter who leads the country after May 2022. The task ahead is going to be significantly difficult. Conventional wisdom suggests, and I'm not casting any aspersions at anybody, but conventional wisdom suggests that when you get numbers out of the government, because the government machinery is slow, conventional wisdom suggests that whatever number you get, the real number is bigger than that. That has serious implications. So we may come to the end of the day where we realize that the projected deficit of $951 million is too small. What that is saying to us, we are not at a good place. I think we also need to confront this issue of taxation head on, one time, once and for all. It requires careful, deep, serious, deliberate, intentional study. Yes, accept that. It will take some time, accept that. But I think the time for starting is now. I do understand and appreciate that there's a lot of political capital wrapped up in this whole idea of taxation. And even more importantly, beyond that, there is a whole country value proposition wrapped up in this whole idea of taxation. It's a real thing. it especially has huge implication for the financial services sector. We understand all of that. I fully agree with that. And like the Prime Minister said, when you are in the arena and you have to make these decisions, the trade-off, it becomes, I think, exponentially more, you know, complex. We out here as critics, we out here as commentators, we can say just about anything when you have all of the facts in front of you, because at best we are doing this abstractly. We don't have all of the facts. We don't know what the true picture is. We don't know what all of the deep information is ever about. We're making suppositions and we are making assumptions and we're filling the space with, intellectual thinking sometimes, and you know, maybe smart thinking, but it's never totally full. You know, we have, as they say in economics, bounded rationality. There are some things that we just absolutely don't know. But the bottom line is, I think we have to confront it, and we have to confront it as an issue to be fixed if the country is going to see its way forward. The current debt situation is being discussed, I think, in two narrow terms. Everybody talking about the debt as a debt. And that may sound kind of a little bit paradoxical. It may sound kind of crazy the way I just said. How else would you talk about the debt other than the debt? Well, like I mentioned earlier, the debt is a function of some other things. So in mathematics, you know, you say A is a function of B. So in order to determine what A is, you have to go find out what's happening with B. If B goes up, A goes up. If B goes down, A goes down. So you really do not have to solve in real terms for A. You really don't always have to solve for the debt in real terms. Yes, it needs to be paid down. Yes, we need to find the interest to pay it. Yes, we need to get to a place where our debt to GDP is not 80% or 100%. But how do you change that as an example? You simply grow the economy. Is it simple to grow the economy? Absolutely not. But growing is a must if you're going to move forward. Otherwise, the debt is going to become a huge stumbling block. So just to wrap this up, like I said, we started last week and I just wanted to finish this and not leave it undone, that the current debt situation demands a broader discussion beyond reduction. It's not simple, hey, we need to pay off the debt. Can't be simply that. Remedial action must be tied to growth, which is tied to the fortunes of financial services and domestic investors. There should be a clear and broader discussion around debt management. I see some good things are happening. I see they're advertising for a director of debt management office. I know that come July 1, the Fiscal Responsibility Act is going to come into play. And so there are some good things which are going to fall out of that. And while some persons may not see it this way, the Bahamas has gone ahead through the passing of these legislation and done some things which I think are very, very important. Dala Dukaran, in her most recent paper, lauded the government for doing that, for voluntarily, basically, putting itself in a structural program. It's a smart move. It's an important move, because if that doesn't happen, I believe that the other thing, the thing that we fear the most, could potentially become a greater probability, and that is finding ourselves in the embrace of some external organization going through some structural adjustment program. So like I said, while I don't have the specific remedial actions, broadly speaking, we have to now start to think about how we think about these things. There should be a clear and broader discussion around debt management, taking into account the interests of all the relevant stakeholders. This discussion should serve both as a platform for creating a deeper appreciation of where the Bahamas is and serve to rally the country's collective interests. All of the people who have an interest in the Bahamas doing well, get around. all of the people who have invested in the Bahamas by buying debt, whether it's local or international, gather around. Listen to this. Here is where we are. $10.5 billion, or whatever the number is. We have a problem. And here is how we propose to fix it. And we lay out a very, very cogent plan. What say you? Let's have your input. We will take it into consideration. Oh, good, that makes sense. Good, that makes sense. No, that don't make sense. That is going to kill off the people. We're not in the business of killing off the people. We want to fix this by having the country still survive, yeah? Okay, that makes it. That, good. So now we as a country, and all the interesting stakeholders, the persons who have a pound of flesh on the table, they bought debt, they invest in the country. We are now at a place where we say, good, here is the plan. And if we stick to this plan, subject to adjustment, anything can change, and so we build in some flexibility. If we stick to this and if we start to work these programs with a view of growing the economy, with a view of making sure we don't take any action which is going to shock the economy, then chances are we should be good. This is what I mean about changing the narrative. And that narrative change must necessarily put all of us, all persons who have an interest, the best interest of the Bahamas, must be on the same page. So citizens, residents, lenders, investors, entrepreneurs, everybody need to be in the same place, with the same mindset, understanding that this is the way forward for the country. I think if we do that, I think if when we get to that place, I'm hoping, I'm anticipating that we will get to that place. But when we get there, that's the first step, the first rung on the ladder. Then the work starts. And if we do that, I think things are going to be that much clearer. So everyone who want to see the country do well will develop this appreciation of where we're going. And then everyone has a role to play that must become blatantly clear. So as a citizen, your role is to become productive, more productive. If you're goofing off, stop goofing off. Put on your entrepreneurial hat, put on your investor hat, put on your productivity hat, because guess what? We need every single individual. If you are the private sector, we need you to become more innovative. We need you to do things which are going to grow the country. If you are the public sector, we need you to be more facilitative. We need you to be quick, efficient, and nimble. So we all understand our role in the ultimate outcome of this. Finally, a commitment to take a careful look at the enabling investment environment. The Invest Bahamas Initiative is a step in this direction. However, many other aspects holding the potential for unlocking national value. There are many others, and we must look at all of them. My friends, this is not gospel, but this is my way of thinking about it. And I believe if we start to work through things like this, to shift the narrative, to understand exactly where we are as a country, this particular budget exercise, as difficult as it was or is, as troubling as it is, could be a watershed moment where we move from this place where we meander on this horizon of uncertainty, when we meander on the horizon of not embracing what is there, and when we become very fundamental as to the way forward, seriously, pointedly, working assiduously to, at the end of the day, put the country where it's supposed to be. The risk of doing otherwise is significant, like I mentioned before. And that risk is a fundamental adverse shift in the standard of living which the Bahamas has come to know. And that's all I have to say on that. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to look at this letter from prison. You listen to The Essentials. Don't move. Come right back. If you have something to say, you want to talk to us, 323-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4259. Definitely want to hear from you. We said a lot. You must have something to say. We can't do this without you. Give us a call. Come right back.
You know it's so essential, so serious.
For CostRight membership and join the savings club. As a member, you get access to exclusive discounts on your favorite grocery club packs, appliances, electronics, outdoor living, and so much more. Whether shopping for your home or business, you can enjoy low warehouse prices on quality name brand products. Your CostRight membership also allows you to save at other participating businesses, and Gold Card members can earn an annual 2% reward up to $500. Sign up for the CostRight membership card today and let the savings begin.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to The Essentials. We've been through the tree planting exercise and the project and the Caribbean Philanthropic Alliance. We talk a little bit about the budget, just putting a finishing touch on what we did last week. So in this last segment of the show, I want to touch on something which has touched me, I think, very deeply. So last week, we came in and we started the show. Before that, I got a call from one of the producers here at Guardian Radio, and they said, we have a letter for you. And, you know, it's kind of strange. Why would I get a letter at the Guardian? But, you know, it's not beyond the realm of possibilities. So I said, no, well, I'm coming in to do the show on Thursday. Let it remain there. I will pick it up then. After the show, I picked up the letter, looked at it. It was in a government envelope, so a little bit strange, you know. Who is trying to, you know, get me into jail? Maybe it's a summon or something. But anyway, open it and look at it. And I realized that somebody in Her Majesty's prison wrote to me. The letter says, and it's strange, this was written a long time ago. It was written from the 20th of January, 2021. I received it last week. It obviously had to go through a review process, and that review process was stamped the 14th of April. So written on January, sign off on January 20th, sign off on the 22nd by one person, and then it was cleared by the censoring department on the 14th. Interesting. I didn't know all of these things. I'm learning. But the letter starts, I trust that my letter meets you doing well. It's an honor and a privilege to take this opportunity to correspond with you by letter. My name is blah, blah, blah. I am a 44-year-old resident and citizen of Nassau, Bahamas. Presently, I am an inmate in the Bahamas Department of Correctional Services, serving a 30-year sentence for murder. I have 15 years remaining if God spares my life. As an inmate, Guardian Radio helps me to educate myself on what's going on in society. It gives me an appreciation of the issues and what is important for me to know and understand. The talk shows challenges my thought process and awaken my critical thinking. I always look forward to hearing you. So he's talking about me. Yeah, that's interesting. And there is a portion in there which I'm going to skip because it speaks to an incident, something which happened on radio. We don't need to go into that. But he goes on to talk about some things and he mentions some individuals. He likes Juan McCartney. And he says here that Shivago Lang, he likes Juan McCartney because of his realness and how he uses his journalism skills during his show. Mr. Shivago Lang is the Bohemian Albert Einstein. I love his critical thinking. Dazzy Dudemi, a great example of what womanhood should reflect. Mr. Edwards, I love your diversity of intelligence and your motivation style. And it goes on into some other things. But here is an individual. I don't know who the person is. I know the name now. But here's an individual who is writing, who was nowhere in my consciousness. I have no idea about him. If he's in prison for the last 15 years, and he is 44, then certainly he would be somewhere roaming about the road the first time I came to the Bahamas, but I don't know who that is. But that is not important. What is important is the realization that an individual in his state looks to myself, Juan McCartney, Shivago, Dazzy, and I'm sure others, but those are the names that he mentioned, looks to us for, in some way, guidance, looks to us for motivation, looks to us for staying in tune with what's happening in the world. But not only that, as he put it, to challenge his thinking, because he locks into something which I think is very, very important. Shivago Lang's critical thinking, Dazzy's demonstration of womanhood. And he speaks about Juan McCartney's realness. So here's an individual who is incarcerated, not free to move about, but his mind is free to roam. And he's looking for these things from individuals who don't even know that he really exists. Up to now, I didn't know. He talks about the whole idea of wanting to write as an individual who wants to write short, impactful things. He speaks in the letter of an era where he catches himself being judgmental. And he's saying to himself, of all the people in the world, I shouldn't be judgmental. I shouldn't be the one to judge others. Because he said when he pulled back the curtains and opened the closet, he see a lot of many, many skeletons. I kind of jump at that given the fact that he said he was in for murder. But I am assuming that he's using that figuratively. I realize that out of all the people in the world, I am not in a position to judge, gossip about, or criticize anyone. He wants to be better, obviously. And hopefully when he leaves the confines of prison, we're wishing for him long life. Regardless of how you get there, obviously the system said that you were guilty. You did that. We absolutely cannot celebrate anyone who takes another person's life. But what is done is done. And we have to look to the humanity in you. And you would have a long, long time to think about it. And we hope that you would be repentant. And if and when you get the opportunity to step back out here on the streets of the Bahamas, you would be a different person. Of course, you are going to certainly pay for what you have done. Lots of missed opportunities, opportunity for family. I don't know. Persons come and check you out from time to time. But whatsoever it is, there's a price to pay, and obviously you are paying it. But I'm heartened by the fact, and I'm moved by the fact that you actually listen and want to be better. So I really want to say to you, Mr. Inmate, SR, that's your initial, I want to say thank you for taking the time to write me the letter. I understand that people in prison have a lot of time, but you didn't have to write it. And you wrote it on the back of what you heard on radio and the way you thought I behaved. And I'm glad that in that instant it was positive and it impacted you positively. I thank you for that. Because it's humbling to understand that when you try to do good and be at your best, you could be positively influencing and impacting someone somewhere out there in the world, in the strangest of places. I had no idea. I have never, ever in my life looked into a jail cell or in the confines of a prison, not even the prison ground. I've never had the opportunity to. But through radio, I would have penetrated that barrier. And by you listening, now I don't know what the arrangements are. I'm almost sure that you're not able to hear this show because it may be lights out time at this point in time. But maybe somebody will tell you about this. And maybe you'll have an opportunity to listen to it at some point when it gets uploaded on the internet. But I want to say to you, thank you for writing. It's humbling. It's kind of scary too, right? At some level, to realize that in that particular moment, I could have gone off the deep end. And you as an individual who obviously seemed to be searching for some enlightenment and up to that point in time would have maybe formed an opinion. I don't know if that opinion was formed in that moment or it was formed before, but let's assume it was. I could have done something else which would have changed that position fundamentally. That is the power of being consistent and doing what you do with honesty and integrity and humility. But what about us out here walking up and down free? So you can be free, but you can be imprisoned. Imprisoned by your thoughts and your thinking. All of us, me, you, anybody, we have the opportunity to go all about the place subject to curfew these days, anywhere we want to go, but we may not be free in our minds. And this individual is demonstrating the fact that though incarcerated, is cast in his mind, has cast his mind beyond the walls of his prison. And is thinking and open for the possibility of things to come. So while some of us are free, but imprisoned by our thinking, you can also be in physical bondage and be free in your thinking. And I hope this letter, this moment, this slice of reality is a demonstration of that. That you're getting to the point where you have wrestled with your situation. You have come to grips with it. There's nothing you can do about it. They're not going to let you out. But you have come to grips with that. And now you are seeking to be a thinker. an individual who is finding ways, hopefully, of how your life can positively impact others. I'll say to you and say to us and say to everybody else, don't allow your circumstance to dictate your outlook. You may be on lockdown, but your mind isn't. You may be in terrible circumstances, but your mind is never there. Things may not be going your way, but you can think yourself into a new reality. As I reflect on this particular time, this COVID-19 episode, this has been one of the roughest times in my life, really. But it has been one of the most rewarding and most fulfilling times, because I choose not to allow the vagaries of the moment to trap me, to entrap me, to imprison me. I can keep my mind free. And it is one of the reasons why when I received this letter, it felt so refreshing. This was generated out of an episode of things which took place in the throes of the coronavirus when we were on lockdown and, you know, things were happening. So it's a good thing. Whatsoever your situation, always remember that there is hope. Never lose hope. As long as you're not dead. As long as you're not dead. I hear Les Brown the other day saying, as long as you're not sleeping in the arms of the earth, the grips of the earth, there is hope. So to you, Mr. Inmate, I want you to maintain hope. We are not discounting what you may have done to be there. Not at all. But you still have life, and therefore you still have a future. We must always remember, you must always remember, I must always remember, that we have the freedom to come and go very often. But we don't always give ourselves the freedom and the permission to dream. And to dream in bountiful terms, to dream in terms which, you know, shift our chemistry, the chemistry of our body, and change the hormones and let us feel better. So I could be sitting in prison in block A, cell number 156. I'm just making this up. But I could be living out there on the winds of possibility, you know, waiting for that moment. And I think that's really what we need to do. Embrace the hope and always give ourselves permission to dream. Give yourself permission to be okay with that which you cannot change, and to work on what you can. So you, Mr. Inmate, there's absolutely, unequivocally no way, I think, that you're going to be out tomorrow, and maybe not for the next 15 years. You can't change that. What you can change is what you fill your head with, what you fill your mind with, what you study, what you read, what you listen to, how you prepare yourself mentally for the possibility of being back in society. The way you will be in such a way, such that you would never ever find yourself in a position to even be accused of anything, much less the thing that you are in prison for now. You must give yourself permission to be that, to work on the things that you can, and really accept the things which you cannot. So there's always a lesson. There's always a lesson. There are always many, many, many lessons to be learned from all circumstances. So just like the inmate would have listened to the radio show, listened to one, listened to Shivago, listen to Dazzy, listen to myself and anybody else, and would be learning things, so too is there a lesson in me receiving this letter from you, that it doesn't matter where you are in life, it doesn't matter where you go, it don't matter where your station is, you are interconnected with others. And all of those persons are at different places. In this instance, in prison. Accused or at least found guilty of murder, doing time, 15 years still to go of a 30-year sentence. But the connection is there, and we have the ability to impact others. And if we are lucky enough, we have the ability to impact them in such a way to change their lives. So always look for the lesson. And remember that, you know, there's always teachers. Lots of teachers out there. People you hear every day, see every day, touch every day are your teachers. But they never appear to be so until you have made the decision to become a student. When the student is ready, the teacher appears. So never, never allow your mind to become your prison or your hell. Many times, I've heard it before, we refer to that place as Fox Hell Prison. Mr. Inmate and anybody else who is there, as you serve out your time, as you pay your price to society for what you would have done, don't allow your physical circumstances to be the totality of your existence. Yes, the physical burden may be harsh. Yes, it may be tough, but there's another part of you which can survive that with elegance, with dignity, with great joy in many ways. And you have to search for that. And that is, I think, capital advice not only for persons who are incarcerated, but certainly for me and you, all of us here. We should not allow our minds to become our prison. Remember, all of us have this very interesting jailer. It is the mind. And when I say our mind become our prison, we are in a way imprisoned by our minds, in a way, all the time. It's just a matter is, am I in a good prison or am I in a bad prison? Do I have a good jailer or do I have a bad jailer? If you have a mind which is unsettled, unestablished, and in turmoil, you have a bad and wicked jailer. If you have one which does otherwise, then you're in a better position. Better position. So today, I ask you, and I say to you, Mr. Inmate, Mr. SR, decide today to live free. Decide today to live free, no matter where you are, no matter the fact that you are in prison. Decide today that regardless of your circumstances, you're going to live free. And you're going to do so by thinking freely. And you're going to achieve that by maintaining a mind which is free from bondage and isms and dogmas. I think you can do that. And I want to thank you for writing me. And I think after I make some inquiries, I will write back to you. I'll figure that out. But I'll write back to you because I think I owe you that. I think I owe you that. And I think I want to thank you for sending your message and sending your lesson. Because in this particular moment, at this particular time, you were my teacher. And I honor you for that. And to everybody else who is listening, remember, you don't have to be in prison physically to be imprisoned. Free your mind, think clearly, and make sure that every single day, you're working to keep yourself from bondage. We're going to end it there, and we're going to play this song for you, Mr. SR in jail. I think it's an appropriate song. I just want to say to everybody else who have been listening, thanks for listening. Want to ask you to never allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. You've been listening to The Essentials. Good evening.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Lord. Mm-hmm. I was buried alive. But I'm still breathing. I don't know what tomorrow may bring, but I got a feeling. Mm-hmm. I am alive. There must be a reason.
but I'm still breathing. I don't know what tomorrow may bring, but I got a feeling. Oh, I, now I am alive. There must be a reason. I was given one more chance. My heart still beating. Now all this time I've been blind, only running against the wind. Friends of mine pass with time. After living a life of sins, how many give up, many give in?